Chapter 13. The Radical Character. The Realism, Non-Realism, Radicalism Triangle. Fiction's conflicting treatments of reality create a triangle of character possibilities. In one corner, realism gives characters the powers they have in ordinary life. In a second corner, non-realism gives them powers far beyond the ordinary. At the third corner, radicalism warps the powers found in the other two. All three extremes meet and overlap within this triangle, creating an infinite variety of characters. Realism. Conventional characters in conventional worlds. The literary movement known as realism began 2 centuries ago in reaction to the operatic excesses of romanticism. Realism works from the ground up, but in truth, its style of offhanded underplay is as artificial as the high-style overplay it replaced. Realistic writers gather close observations of people and behaviors, stir these inside the imagination, filter this concoction through the latticework of the mind, and finally crystallize it into a character who lives in a world that echoes ours. She has a unified self, moral balance, rational perceptions of reality, interactions with other characters, willful pursuits of desire, capacity to choose and act with purpose, and flexibility to change. This protagonist, surrounded by a cast of similar roles, acts out a story that by cultural conventions, readers and audiences accept as everyday reality. You have seen and read these works all your life. Non-realism. Conventional characters in unconventional worlds. Non-realism places the conventional characters of realism inside extra-realities powered by forces such as the supernatural in Pirates of the Caribbean, the magical in Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, the coincidental in 1Q84, the metaphorical in Babe, the paranormal in The Dead Zone, the transnormal in 6 Characters in Search of an Author, an opaque bureaucracy in The Trial, dream power in Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, futuristic science in Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, time travel in Somewhere in Time, time warps in Looper. Some of these extended realities are populated by characters who sing, La Traviata, dance, The Sleeping Beauty, or sing and dance, The Book of Mormon. Non-realism often eliminates the fourth wall to let characters talk to theater audiences, Hair, film audiences, Wayne's World, or television audiences, Fleabag. Non-realism grows out of either conscious fantasies during the day or subconscious dreams at night. Once these imaginary settings and casts inspire a story, they play as grand metaphors for idealized worlds, expressing humanity's wish fulfillments. The fictional worlds of realism and non-realism vary extremely, but nonetheless, they share 2 things in common. 1. No matter how bizarre or real a setting may seem, once folded into a fiction, it develops rules of causality, of how and why things happen, patterns that operate like the laws of physics to shape what can and cannot occur. 2. Characters who live in both real and unreal worlds believe in them. From the cast's point of view, everything they see and hear seems as real as pain. They may at first, like Phil Connors in Groundhog Day, doubt their world and test its laws. But in time, a fictional reality becomes their reality, and they behave in a more or less normal way. This is the nature of storytelling. The world of Homer's Odyssey contains gods and monsters, but Odysseus deals with them as any hero would. Conventional characters exist in social, cultural, and physical settings that are either realisms, imitations of reality, or non-realisms, imagined reinventions of reality. The behaviors and motivations of conventional characters demand credibility. The meanings of their stories are ultimately clear and expressed with emotional impact. Their dialogue strives to be instantly understood. Their tellings bring freshly observed details and insights into human nature. The note to take here is that the fully expressed character, built around a unified dimensionality, is standard in both realism and non-realism. These characters inhabit the hits and bestsellers of page, stage, and screen. Therefore, think carefully about the tastes of your readers and audiences and which reality they want, realism or non-realism, because in all probability, they do not want radicalism. Radicalism, unconventional characters in unconventional worlds. The more a writer loses faith in meaning, the more she feels a pull toward radicalism. From the very first, philosophers assumed that life had meaning, and that finding that meaning is mankind's chief goal. This pursuit wound its way through the centuries, but then, by the 19th century, Nietzsche, Kierkegaard, and other voices warned of a rising tide of meaninglessness. This trend deepened as psychoanalysis, led by Freud, Jung, and Adler, discovered disunities within the self and the near impossibility of knowing your true identity, let alone finding a meaning to guide it. 2 world wars and a dozen genocides later, nihilism found its voice in postmodern works of theater, cinema, and prose of the absurd that revolutionized storytelling and character. Radicalism finds both the outer and inner life meaningless, so it reverses everything. Instead of continuity, fragmentation. Instead of clarity, distortion. Instead of emotional immersion, intellectual exertion. Instead of involvement, distance. Instead of progression, repetition. Unconventionality is radicalism's convention. Whatever's orthodox, the radicalist does the opposite. But, ironically, that doesn't set her free. As Martin Heidegger pointed out, opposition is invariably comprised of a decisive and often perilous dependence. Radicalism is to character what cubism is to portraiture. The writer, as if painting a Picasso-esque portrait, exaggerates, shatters, shrinks, distorts, and rearranges selves Yet somehow, the reader audience still sees a character. Radical settings are highly symbolic, but their rules for causality are radically inconsistent. In Jean-Luc Godard's film Weekend, anything can happen for no reason. In Samuel Beckett's play Waiting for Godot, nothing happens, again, for no reason. These reimaginings, needless to say, demand new and very radical characters. Radical characters have little relationship to anything beyond themselves, not God or society, not family or lovers. They are either isolated and static, for example, Tom Stoppard's play, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, or mobbed and frantic, for example, Marlon James's novel, A Brief History of Seven Killings. Their dialogue often degenerates into babble, as in David Lynch's film, Inland Empire. The medium for expressing radical characters with relative ease is prose. The novelist, in first or third person, can reach into the mind of a character and emulate her splintered, skipping stone thoughts, sketching out her wildly subjective, often paranoid anxieties and impressions, her instant impulses, fragmented desires, and fractured personality. This technique was foundational to everything Samuel Beckett wrote for page and stage. In White Noise, novelist Don DeLillo created characters whose identities are not just in doubt, but absolutely uncertain. Thomas Pynchon's Gravity's Rainbow swirls 400 characters around Tyrone Slothrop, who may or may not be anything that he, other characters, or even the author say he is. For the playwright and screenwriter, expressing radical characters becomes a bit more difficult because the physical presence of an actor gives a role a sense of solidity. In Happy Days, Samuel Beckett worked against the actor effect by burying his only two characters, Winnie and Willie, up to their necks in dirt and debris. In Holy Motors, Cinema of the Absurd filmmaker Leos Carax has his protagonist Oscar perform 9 different impersonations ranging from an old female beggar to a Chinese gangster to the husband and father of chimpanzees. Creating a radical character. To radicalize a character, simply empty out her conventional aspects. Next are 9 possible deletions that lead characters toward the extreme. 1. Subtract self-awareness. The self-aware dramatic character can step back from the struggle and think the thought, you know, this could get me into real trouble, and then, despite the threat, go on. But when you subtract self-awareness, dramatic characters turn into comic obsessives. The comic mind is ruled by a blind obsession, single-minded as a stone, persistent as the sea, repetitious as rain. To create a farce, the comedy writer locks the character into her fixation, then exploits it at every opportunity. In A Fish Called Wanda, Archie Leach obsessively fears embarrassment, yet stumbles into one red-faced humiliation after another. In the Pink Panther films, Inspector Clouseau obsesses on perfection as a detective, yet blunders through his investigations one pratfall after another. In Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David obsesses on proper social behavior, yet finds himself surrounded with people who constantly break his petty rules. In Bridesmaids, Annie Walker obsesses on her one and only friendship and yet ruins the relationship at every turn. Conventional comic obsessives like these have a common sense interest or two that rounds out their natures, but not the radical character. Radicals push beyond obsession into absurd limits of monomania. To radicalize a comic character, take away everything except her obsession, then trap her inside it and never let her out. In The Maids, Jean Genet traps the maids in their sadomasochistic games. In Exit the King, Eugene Ionesco traps Berenger in his fear of death. In Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, Tom Stoppard traps Rosencrantz and Guildenstern in Hamlet's story. In A Behanding in Spokane, Martin McDonagh traps Carmichael in an endless search for his missing hand. 2. Subtract depth. The opposite of a full, complex, and revealed character is a role that's emptied out. A character whose humanity shrinks into an inner void, putting her just a step or two away from the radical. In Falling Down, Eb Rowe Smith peels away William Foster's sanity. In Capote, Dan Flutterman extracts Truman Capote's morality. In The Imitation Game, Graham Moore amputates Alan Turing's core self. Despair swallows the humanity of all three of these men, leading their lives to the brink of absurdity. 3. Subtract change. Complex, multidimensional protagonists undergo arcs of change. Flat characters do not. Flat characters contract into themselves, eliminating their ties to other characters. In genres of realism, flat characters are revealed, but incapable of change. For example, Jude and Tess in Thomas Hardy's novels Jude the Obscure and Tess of the D'Urbervilles. Their only change is a downward slide from hopeful to hopeless. In genres of non-realism, heroes and villains, with or without superpowers, are also flat. Characters in action-filled, speculative fictions change the world, but not themselves. They personify good or evil and obey ancient storytelling traditions by staying either good or evil until they die. In both non-realism and realism, unchanged characters suggest that the possibility of change, no matter how remote, exists. If Hardy had allowed Jude to become the classical scholar of his dreams, Jude's arc to fulfillment would be profound and moving. If Bruce Wayne ever got fed up with the public's lack of respect for Batman and decided to use his skills to build an evil empire, the change would be shocking, yet fascinating. I'd watch that sequel. So, if flat characters in conventional genres change, their change surprises, yet seems credible and meaningful. On the other hand, if a radical character living in a radical world were to change from flat to complex, the switch would seem false. In Waiting for Godot, two aimless characters, Vladimir and Estragon, sum up the flatness of their natures with the refrain, "Nothing to be done." But if one were to turn to the other and say, "Enough waiting. I don't think Godot will ever show up. Let's go find jobs and make something of our lives." And off they went, excited by the chance to change. Samuel Beckett's existential masterpiece would collapse into silliness. In novelist Will Self's trilogy of Umbrella, Shark, and Phone, flat characters fragment into five different points of view. Shards of thought express variations of dissociative identity disorder, drug-induced hallucination, and autism spectrum discord. If the author unified these pieces into whole characters, they would corrupt his wild creation. 4. Subtract identity. Prior to the 20th century, authors wove their characters' identities from the cultural threads that encircled them: gender, class, family, age, religion, nationality, education, profession, language, race, taste in art, and the like. When a character said, "I am a," what followed were nouns drawn from her immediate world. This ancient practice continues today, reinforced by identity politics. The modernist movement, however, reversed that pattern. It turned away from conflicts between characters to tell tales located in the inner life and the search for an everlasting private truth. Modernist characters turn their back on the world, hoping to find a core self waiting quietly within, surrounded by infinite freedom of thought and the beauty of creativity. By the end of the century, however, postmodernists found that the inner life offers no such refuge. The outer and inner worlds are just two versions of hell. In Samuel Beckett's novel, The Unnameable, the protagonist declares that he's, quote, "shut the door, at home to no one," unquote, including himself. A character homeless within himself suffers derealization or depersonalization or both. Derealization is the sudden perception of the world as unreal. Depersonalization is the sudden perception of yourself as unreal. Derealization is the side effect of despair, often magnified by drugs and alcohol. Depersonalization is the side effect of physical and psychological trauma or extreme loneliness. A prisoner condemned to solitary confinement over time inevitably loses his identity. When finally taken out in a straitjacket, his first question, if he can still speak, is, "Who am I?" Derealization strips a character of the power to empathize, to see humanity in others. Depersonalization severs self-empathy, a character's power to feel her own humanity. How many different ways can a character lose self-empathy and with it her identity? Here is a brief list. A. Loss of an identity source. A character draws both characterization and true character from her surrounding culture. If an outside power destroys the sources of her identity, she vanishes with them. In Wide Sargasso Sea, by Jean Rice, Antoinette Causeway, a Creole Jamaican heiress, marries an Englishman. He takes her from her island home to his, and then insults her race and poisons their marriage with adultery. Locked in an attic and stripped of all sense of self, she goes mad. In Things Fall Apart by Chinua Achebe, a Nigerian tribal champion fights against English colonists and missionaries, but his tribe converts to Christianity and turns against him. Stripped of his ancestral identity, he commits suicide. B. Rejection of an Identity Source. If a character hates her ancestry and so turns against her religion, ethnicity, gender, or any other personality-shaping influence, she alters, if not utterly erases, her identity. In Look Back in Anger by John Osborne, Jimmy Porter feels heroic energies pulsing through him, but now that the British Empire has collapsed, he realizes that his chance for an epic life is lost. He's an ordinary working man who will never be part of a great enterprise, never live the courageous identity he craves. In More Happy Than Not by Adam Silvera, teenager Aaron Soto hires a psychotechnology company to erase his gay identity. The company removes a few memories, but gayness isn't a memory. It's genetic. C. Trauma. Damage caused by ordeals or genetic abnormalities such as schizophrenia can shatter a character's identity. In The Bourne Identity, Jason Bourne suffers traumatic amnesia and goes in search of his identity. In The Three Faces of Eve, an alias Grace, doppelgangers, and multiple personalities give the protagonist different identities, none of them hers. In Blue Jasmine, Jasmine Francis revenges her husband's adultery by betraying him to the FBI for embezzlement. Soon penniless, her identity crumbles as she suffers a pathological, delusional breakdown. D. Identity theft. An imposter slowly steals a character's identity until no one believes that she is who she says she is. In Single White Female, Hetty Carlson suffers a soulless, deep-seated emptiness. To find a fulfilling self, she imitates her roommate and then steals her identity. E. Obsession. When fanatics obsess, they take actions that seem out of character. Shocked, they step back from what they've done and excuse it with, "I wasn't myself." In fact, their choice under pressure revealed exactly who they are. In Lust Caution, the Japanese army occupies Shanghai in 1942. As part of an assassination plot, a beautiful young rebel seduces the head of the secret police, but their passion becomes her sexual obsession. When given a chance to kill, she suddenly shocks herself by choosing not to end his life, but to save it. 5. Subtract purpose. Many radical characters turn their backs on the world. They flee the turmoil of relationships by withdrawing into the mental life, thinking that there they will enjoy freedom, creativity, and quiet self-awareness. Instead, their meditations meander pointlessly. They find creativity pretentious and self-knowledge painful. When involuntary memories pop up from the past, they either deny their truth or draw blank. Stuck between the inner and outer life, they try to flee both and live in neither. When radical characters crave company, it's to escape their acute anxieties about modern afflictions, existential minutiae, and meaningless inner boredom. They are purposeless. In Beckett's Crap's Last Tape, Crap's doctor has warned him that bananas are bad for his health. So Crap peels a banana, sticks it in his mouth, then stands for minutes on end, staring into space, unable or unwilling to bite down a banana protruding from his face. Radical characters are purposeless and trapped. Trapped in an incomplete play. Six characters in search of an author. In mindless repetition. The chairs. In maniacal politics. The arsonists. In an unknown menace. The birthday party. In conformity. Rhinoceros. By death. Exit the king. In Shakespeare's play. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. In bureaucracy, the trial. In a police state, Pillow Man. In mundanity, the flick. In the Amazon jungle, the encounter. In a neighbor's backyard, escaped alone. Like an improv actor on Whose Line Is It Anyway? These characters are stuck on stage and cannot escape their playwright's premise. For many 21st century writers, political absurdity has blurred their sense of purpose. Gridlock inside an artist often paralyzes the creatures she creates. Static characters who feel that nothing redeems life, not love, not art, not knowledge, not God, and certainly not sex. Thus, the perfect metaphor for today's loss of purpose is the zombie. Like zombies, radical characters long to live no life at all. Were it possible, they would inhabit a zombie zone of nothing. 6. Subtract unity. A complex character is one person who acts in two directions. She loves and hates, tells truth and lies. These cohesive contradictions unify her, whereas the unstable shards of a radical role fragment the character. In today's participatory theater, for example, when a cast interacts with its audience, their roles splinter into character and performer. For example, Brute Force, Sleep No More, 66 Minutes in Damascus. In Isabel Wadner's novel Gaudy Bauble, objects become characters and then compound themselves. A face printed on a sweatshirt multiplies into an army of transsexuals. 7. Subtract maturity. The daily task of a mature mind is to mediate between the world around her and the instincts inside her, balancing these two hostile powers and negotiating an inner peace. The radical character is an eternal child who surrenders to the world obedience or to her impulses violence or to both at once, the violent savage who obeys orders. In Haruki Murakami's The Wind-Up Bird Chronicle, when Toru, the novel's childlike protagonist, isn't searching for his cat or his wife, he's ruminating at the bottom of a well. The risque send-up staged by Madison, Wisconsin's Broome Street Theater, such as Oklahoma and The Ballerina and The Economist, show little interest in maturity. The same is true of screenplays by Broome Street alumnus Charlie Kaufman. Human Nature, for example, features a psychologist who teaches table manners to mice. 8. Subtract conscience. An evil character commits unregretted acts of brutality because she has no conscience to restrain her. Characters of conscienceless evil motivate power struggles in a wide variety of genres, such as crime, war, and action-adventure, as well as political and family dramas. When stakes are high, people know how to vacate their conscience. It's commonplace. Radical evil takes brutality to another level. As the Marquis de Sade explains in Philosophy in the Bedroom, quote, through cruelty, one rises to heights of superhuman awareness and sensitivity to new modes of being that cannot be reached any other way, unquote. The core psychology of radical evil is sadism, the belief that common objectives of torture, information, and confession distract from the unutterable pleasure and transcendent purity of the torturer's experience. Radical evil seeks grotesque pleasure. Acts of radical evil nauseate into disgust. Disgust is a gut reaction to rot, to foul-tasting, foul-smelling feces, gore, pulp, puke. Physical disgust reacts against these rank animal spillages to protect the body from poisons. Social disgust reacts against moral rot to protect the soul from evil. Profoundly evil characters turn your stomach, literally. In Lord of the Rings, Lord Sauron is not radically evil. He is, in fact, rather elegant. He fights to maintain power, but he is not sadistic, so he provokes no disgust. In contrast, O'Brien, the party enforcer in George Orwell's dystopian 1984, locks a wire enclosure around Winston Smith's head, then fills the surrounding cage with ravenous rats scrabbling to eat the man's face. O'Brien, content in his pleasures, watches as this horrific psychic torture rips through his victim. O'Brien is radical evil. 9. Subtract belief. Here's a useful question to ask of any role you create, conventional or radical. How crazy is my character? Sane in a sane world? Insane in a sane world? Sane in an insane world? Or insane in an insane world? The first three possibilities encompass characters found in realism and non-realism. Radical characters inhabit the fourth. Patricia Highsmith's Tom Ripley falls into the second category. The world around him is sane, but he is not. He's a psychosociopath who kills when necessary. To Ripley, necessary means getting what he wants by paying for it with someone else's life. Lewis Carroll's Alice fits the third case. She's sane, but the world around her is not. This well-bred, snobby little girl needs to make sense out of an insane world, or she'll never find her way home. What makes Ripley and Alice conventional characters is their trust that the world makes sense. A radical character lacks such belief. Radical characters cannot find meaning in either their outer or their inner lives, and they certainly do not believe in anything spiritual. Belief is a personal interpretation of reality. Religious belief trusts a God created reality and gave it moral imperatives. Patriotic belief trusts in the righteous and tradition-bound reality of a nation-state. Scientific belief trusts that mathematical laws of causality hold reality together. Romantic belief trusts that love is the ultimate value. With beliefs such as these, conventional characters find purpose in their lives. Radical characters, having no belief to buoy them, despair in the face of absurdity. In Perfume, a novel by Patrick Susskind, Jean-Baptiste finds people, including himself, disgusting and meaningless. Void of belief, he makes the ultimate escape from absurdity by enticing a starving mob into ripping him apart and cannibalizing him in the street. The future. Unconventional characters in conventional worlds. The postmodern avant-garde died decades ago and was replaced by a retrograde. The post-postmodern theater, films, and novels of today simply recycle the 20th century, exhausting its every minimal or maximal device ad nauseum. As a Beckett character might say, nothing that hasn't been done. So, instead of copying the past, the leading edge of 21st century storytelling satirizes the present. In classical satire, clear-minded narrators ridiculed lunatic societies. Jonathan Swift perfected this technique in Gulliver's Travels. 70 years ago, Samuel Beckett ridiculed reality itself with radical characters in absurd settings. Today's writers reverse both Swift and Beckett. They place radical characters in a conventional setting and then draw us into empathy despite our better natures. The black comedy protagonists of The White Tiger by Arvind Adiga, A Behanding in Spokane by Martin McDonagh, Birdman by Alejandro Iñárritu, The Sellout by Paul Beattie, and All Grown Up by Jamie Attenborough are criminal or lunatic or criminally lunatic. In fact, the most radical characters now star in their own long-form series. The anxiety-disordered and clinically depressed protagonist of Mr. Robot. The charming cannibal of Santa Clarita Diet. The psychotic drug experimenters in Maniac. The darkly obsessed comedians in I'm Dying Up Here. Villanelle, the lovable serial killer in Killing Eve. Barry, the actor-assassin in Barry. And Jimmy McGill, the criminal lawyer in Better Call Saul. As writers push the limits of empathy, they ask their readers and audiences to identify with more and more crazed and dangerous characters. The answer to the question, how dark is too dark for the contemporary reader audience, seems further and further away.